All right, it's a pleasure to have you back with us as we bring in Matt Vaskirjan, of course, a native of the Bay Area, Moraga, Campo Lindo High School. And Matt, how are you today?
Marty, doing great. How come you didn't tell me I would also be on with Bill Lasky today? I'm thrilled to be on with Bill because that 85 Giants team, to me, still should have won more than 62 games, Bill. I don't want to scratch an old wound.
How many did Bill win? Come on, Bill.
In 85? Not too many, Marty. That was a 100 loss season. So Matt's jarring me right there a little bit.
That was Davy. I think that was Davy. Yeah. Hey, Matt, you know, it's funny. 30 years in the business for you. Of course, you're the voice of Sunday Night Baseball, ESPN. You're all over MLB all the time. I don't know how you do so many shows. And you got Angels Baseball in there as well. 30 years in the business, and you look like you just came out of college.
That's because I'm short, Marty. That's short guys
age. You look great.
I'm convinced, man. If you know, you put a microscope to it, it doesn't look so good. But on the outside, because I'm short, I'm pulling it off. Everybody thinks I'm in my whatever 40s still, so let them keep thinking that. That's fine by me.
Well, I love it. The ESPN Sunday Night Baseball, how do you like it, working with A-Rod and Buster Olney? What's it like for you? And, of course, we're going to see you tomorrow night, so go ahead.
Well, I've liked it the last couple weeks because we've been in the Bay Area, which is great. It's great to be home, and it's great to think that, you know, maybe – the national media isn't ignoring the West Coast as much as it has in the past because it can't. I mean, the Giants and Dodgers and A's and Padres until recently and Angels with Otani and Trout, even though he hasn't played, like it kind of commands your attention. So it's been great being here the past couple of weekends. I enjoy it. I enjoy doing local games because you're rooting a little bit, and I like us versus them a little bit better than I like them versus them. And that's how you kind of have to play it when you're doing the game on a quote unquote national broadcast format. Mm-hmm. But it's fun. It's fun because we get good matchups every weekend and relevant baseball.
How do you feel, Matt, about go ahead. Go ahead, Bill. I was just going to ask Matt before Bill comes in. How do you feel about this one, the Giants Dodgers? And look, you've seen these races before. Here we go, 27 to go, one game separating the two, and when this is truly September baseball, and it couldn't be better with these two.
Yeah, I mean, this is what it's supposed to be, right? The only thing that would make this better is if there was one more left in their season series, say the last week of September, because other teams are going to kind of interlope into this and determine the fate of the division and, to a lesser degree, the wild card, because San Diego's hanging on for dear life. It's great. I mean, we all, you know, as people with some institutional knowledge up here about Giants and A's baseball, we can remember the years when both teams are good, the Giants and A's. We can remember the team when both teams are good in the NL West, the Giants and Dodgers. Unfortunately, the exception is that there are years when they're both good. So, I mean, I think baseball fans appreciate this because it doesn't come around every year that the Giants and Dodgers are not only vying for the division, but the best two teams in the National League, if not in all the sport. So, you know, the shame of it is that it might not meet in a NLCS. That's what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping for a 7-game LCS between these two teams. And for that to go down, one team's going to have to get the wild card and win it. And then you hope it breaks right that they meet again in the third week of October. But it's been awesome to watch.
Matt, thanks for joining us today. And I'm going to stay right with that Dodger-Giant rivalry. When you start looking at what they did at the trade deadline, picking up Scherzer and Turner, and, of course, the Giants pick up Bryan and Watson, both teams were really kind of vying each other to see what each one was doing, but you could see where the Dodgers needed that starting staff, of course, with Bauer going out. What did you see with both these teams at that trade deadline?
You know, my takeaway from it, Bill, was that the Dodgers, they are just throwing – they don't care about the luxury tax threshold at all, obviously. What are they at, 280-something million now? It's just not a concern at all for them. Not every team has that kind of largesse. And the Dodgers not only operate smartly because their front office is among the better in the sport, but they also can write the biggest check, and that's a hell of a combination. The Giants will be there in short order, though, and I think that after this year, when they're – I know that they re-upped with Crawford, but they're on the books payroll commitments for next year and beyond are minuscule compared to what the Dodgers are carrying. So the Giants are going to – they're going to – this is a sustainable thing for both teams, and the trade deadline made them better. And what they might lack in the beginning of 2022, next year's trade deadline will do the same thing, because you're talking about the Dodgers, who can just keep spending, and the Giants, who have so much payroll coming off the books, they're going to be able to spend with them dollar for dollar should they choose.
Yeah, but Farhan doesn't roll that way. Farhan likes Tampa Bay. It's going to be interesting to see what he does this winter, whether he's competitive with Chris Bryant, whether he goes out and gets it. It's not going to be a shortstop because they got Crawford. So I'll be interested to see how Farhan approaches this. But, you know, the openers, with all that said and done, and as you two guys point out, the Dodgers have two slots where they've got to throw openers, and they don't throw one guy and then six innings behind that guy. They throw one an inning, and the Giants have two openers for this weekend, and that's the two best teams in baseball. How about that?
Yeah, yeah, and you know it's wild when it works and it happens by design, which it is here. You know, you look at Jay Jackson starting today for the Giants, and could you have imagined 2 years ago when Cody Bellinger was the most feared left-handed batter in the league, if not the planet? Could you have imagined a right-handed opener starting as the Giants are today, and Cody Bellinger not being in the lineup as is the case today? It, you know, it changes, man. This is fluid. You don't just throw the same names out there and hope that you can replicate statistics from years past. There's so much interesting stuff about this matchup tonight in this series, as you point out, Marty. I mean, yesterday's game for me was fascinating on so many levels. One of the micro levels that I was interested in was that Gabe was able to start his relievers, and he used about half the number that the Dodgers did. He was able to use his guys to start innings. He didn't have a single mid-inning pitching change, and it was an 11-inning affair. Dave Roberts, on the other hand, he needed guys to come in and bail people out, and it just worked out differently for him, and they didn't have enough in the end. 11 pitchers in a regular season game is obscene. But, you know, they can work that way. And it was just fascinating to watch that thing unfold. Didn't feel like 4.5 hours last night, by the way. It might have if I was broadcasting it, but watching it didn't feel like that.
Matt, you have watched so much baseball in your career, and the game has changed so much. Strikeouts are up. Home run balls are up. Batting averages are down. How do you compute all this and try to make sense of it?
Boy, that's the million-dollar question, Bill. I don't really love that it's going that way. And, you know, the game that I was raised watching wasn't this. And values of players weren't determined through microanalytics. That old-fashioned slash line meant something. Batting average, slug on base. I still think batting average counts. I might be a weirdo that way. I do not think that a strikeout is the same as an out when you put the ball in play, as some members of the analytics community try to argue. You know, I guess like anything else, you either adapt to what's happening now or you get left behind. So those of us that came along reluctantly into this world have learned to embrace it, if only so you can talk it. I don't have to subscribe to it. I wouldn't build a team that way. I'd still build a team with guys that can make contact. There's just no substituting contact. And the strikeout stuff is another deal. I mean, and Bill, you know this probably better than any of us. The way pitching is taught now, it's give me everything you have for as long as you can have it. And if that means that you're a 3 1/3 inning guy, then we'll figure out the rest of the outs behind you. There was no managing your arsenal and managing your game plan to maximize your start. Now it's blow it out, and if it means 11 outs, great. If it means 7 outs, okay, we'll deal with that too. I hate that. I liked watching. I like being able to buy a ticket and being able to watch whoever it was on the mound, Dave Stewart, Billy Swift, whoever it was, negotiate that lineup the third time. And what was he doing differently? That stuff to me was what we've lost.
Mm-hmm. Well, you'll see a guy tomorrow night in Bueller. Urias tonight has thrown 389 innings in his career, 150 of them this year. So I don't know how Dave Roberts is going to negotiate this if he has trouble early. But Bueller tomorrow night, he may be the best pitcher in the National League right now.
I would, you know, I'd consider him the Cy Young front runner by a little bit. The conversation between he and Wheeler seemed to be pretty even until recently, and there's some separation now for Bueller. He seems to be the one guy on that staff, even though he's young and they are aware of his innings, they kind of trust him third time through the order, which says something. I think they trust Urias if they could get him there. The problem is, you know, he had major shoulder surgery a couple of years ago. They do try to limit his bullets, if you will. But here we are at a time of the season where the Dodgers thought, and I had this discussion with Dave Roberts in the spring, they thought that the West, the biggest push was going to come from San Diego. And if they could manage the Padres, that they would have been in a position in, say, early August, late July, where they could have skipped a start or two with guys, where they could have piggybacked a long guy after, say, a Kershaw, when you just get him out there for four innings. They were really looking at trying to maximize performance in September and October, and they thought they'd have a big lead in the division. They'd be able to do that. Well, you know, lo and behold, the Giants come out of nowhere and give them the fight for their lives, and they haven't been able to give guys that ideal planned rest. And they're without Kershaw, among other guys that have been in and out of that rotation, Price most notably. So the fact that the Giants are good has upset the apple cart in so many ways. National TV schedules got blown up. The Dodgers' plans to rest their starters got blown up. The Giants kind of ruined it for everybody, and I know Giants fans absolutely love that.
Matt, three veterans the Giants put out there pretty much daily, and that's Posey, Belt, and Crawford. Crawford has just played one of his best seasons in his career. Why does the national media put him at that top mark like he should be?
You know, I think they're coming around to doing that, Bill. The problem, I wouldn't call it a problem, but the observations on Brandon were older guy, 34 years old, looked like the better years were in the rearview mirror. Initially, when Gabe came here with a very different methodology on at-bat and usage, it appeared, and we might have been wrong about this, it appeared as though the fit wasn't great with Brandon. We were all wrong about that because he's learned to not only embrace the way he's been used, which is frequently as it turns out, but he's had one of the best years of his career, and the Giants rewarded him for that. I love the fact that he is a legacy player here now. I love the fact that he wasn't allowed to get to the market because the last 2 years – we've all been blue in the face talking about this shortstop class, and nowhere in that conversation was Crawford ever mentioned. It was Lindor, and then he got long-term. It was Story, and he didn't get traded at the deadline. It's still Correa, Baez, and who knows what the future is for those guys, Baez in particular, who's been really uneven the last month on and off the field. The guy that's been the steady metronome here has been Crawford, and the Giants are not allowing him to get to the market, which is really great. And he's going to hopefully hang his cap up when he's done as a career Giant. And, you know, you'll put him up on the wall.
Yeah, he will. They've taken themselves out of the shortstop market. Correa is the only one I would be interested in. Baez is in trouble now in New York, and Story doesn't hit out of Colorado and all that. So for me, Correa is the only one, but this New York baseball is interesting. They had a 9-0 lead today. They blew that. Then Lindor hits a 2-run homer to win the game. Baez homers in the game as well. Then you get the Yankees 13 in a row, and all of a sudden you saw it with the Angels last week. They knock them around. How about New York baseball right now?
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, the Yankees, we'll start there. The 13-game winning streak followed by a 4-game slide. And when they had gone 17 of 20, this is before they lost the fourth, it's a pretty good run, right? You should be able to make up some ground. They lost a game and a half to the Rays. in winning 17 out of 20. That's how good Tampa is. And I know you referenced them earlier, Marty. To me, that's the perfect beast. I mean, they've built a near flawless team. They're prepared from a platoon advantage situation, a handedness situation. They've got complementary bullpen pieces for whatever the situation requires, a strikeout, a ground ball, length. They can beat you from both sides of the plate as a lineup. They're lean from a payroll standpoint. That is a perfect animal. And if it were to land on a Giants-Rays World Series, I would not be surprised a bit. I think that Fox might be a little disappointed because they want the sexier markets involved. But from a baseball standpoint, it would be great. The Yankees are good. Yes, they're good. And when what Cole did to the Angels the other day just tells you, a team like the A's or the Red Sox, you're really swimming uphill if you're trying to beat Cole in a one-game wild card. That's why, among the reasons, I wish that the pre-existing format, the one from last year, would have stuck around, the wild card series. I thought that was great, and hopefully it comes back with the new collective bargaining agreement next year. The Mets, I don't know what to make of the Mets, and neither do Mets fans, because it's one step up, two steps back for them, and they've got a short sprint left, a bunch left with Philly, and who knows? Who knows? But it's fascinating in New York right now.
Hey, Matt, you diagnosed the American League pretty well. If you had to make a mark on it, who would be better, American League baseball or National League baseball? Who do you like to cover, and who do you really indulge in this? Is it more American League baseball, or is it more National
League? I'm changing my tune on this daily, Bill. I grew up in, my formative years here were in the 70s, watching a DH late part of the 70s and loving the fact that, you know, even if it was an aging Billy Williams or Willie Crawford or later on for the A's, Dave Kingman or Dave Parker or Don Baylor, I loved that there was always a landing spot for a big hitter. I loved offense as a younger fan because I think younger fans gravitate toward action on base. But here I am a little longer in the tooth, and I will tell you that I like the National League style of game. I like what has to happen strategically when the pitcher comes up. I like the fact that bench guys are more involved in the National League game. If you're a non-starter on an American League roster, you can languish for weeks at a time without ever getting a plate appearance. That's no good for anybody. I think that the universal DH is coming, having said all that, and I think that's going to be a part of the new CBA. I'm not saying that with any authority or specific insight. That's just my instincts, and I think we're probably going to not have this discussion in a year because the DH is going to be in both leagues. What do you think, Bill? I mean, you're a National League guy. I could kind of guess.
Of course. National League. I hope the DH doesn't come, but I think you're right on, Matt. I think it's going to happen, and Of course, pitchers are that ninth hitter, and sometimes they just look terrible at the plate. Now they're not even being able to bunt correctly. There's more action with the DH, of course, but I'm a National League guy. I like that ninth hitter as being a pitcher. I like the substitution. I like the change in here and there. American League, I've played a little bit in American League. The DH definitely does make the lineup stronger, but I'm a National League guy, no doubt.
Yeah. Well, I've come around to the American League. Seeing these get to the number eight hitter and the pitcher just takes you out of so many innings. So I've come around to the American League. Matt Vasgersian with us. Matt, Ohtani. We can't ever let you get off without talking about Ohtani. If you could pick one side for him, hitting or pitching, what would you take?
Man, I would have given you a hands-down hitting side. The first 2 months of the season, I was convinced that the other side of the scorecard was just getting in the way. And then he figured it out. And I couldn't give you an honest answer. I'm a Libra, first of all, so I'll talk myself onto both sides of any equation. His pitching, the pitching component of what he offers has grown up in really short order. Early in the season, he loved his split-finger fastball so much, and why wouldn't you, because it's an amazing pitch. It just got him behind in too many counts. And while he was racking up bigger strikeout totals when he threw that pitch more often, he wasn't getting as deep into games, was problematic for an already pedestrian bullpen. And he realized that, and he made the change. There were no suggestions by the Angels to change the pitch mix. So he keeps his splitter usage a little lower, breaks it out at the right time, usually mid-game when he needs that strikeout on the rare occasion he has to strand a guy in scoring position. He's really figured it out. So, man, you love a guy that can hit, you know, homers the way he can and steal bases the way he can. But I'd almost, if you had to, one, only one answer, I think I'd say pitching right now.
Really?
And tomorrow I'll probably give you a different answer. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, 42 home runs, I think. All right. Very good. Hey, Matt, thanks for taking the time. A pleasure to have you on. I know you're going to enjoy tomorrow night, and we'll hear you on ESPN. And love catching up with you. You do a great job, and keep it up.
Thanks, Matt.
Good talking with you guys as well. Yeah, looking forward to tomorrow. Thanks again.
Okay. All right. That's Matt Vasgersian. More coming up. Wow, what an afternoon. Giants baseball coming up. It's going to be very exciting tonight. The opener, Jay Jackson and Julio Urias on the other side. As Matt says, shoulder surgery a couple of years ago, so they limit the bullets, so to speak, for Urias. So we'll see where this one's going to go tonight. I guarantee it will be a story. More coming up right after this on the Sports Leader.